you are recommending it. Summer is ramping up and there's more and more festivals and firework displays and small town events or walks, like people are telling us about trails to tell us about, or museums or historic sites. Let us know. 218-326-1234. I want to remind you that this Saturday, KEXC is partnering for the Beltrami Block Party with Bridget's Pub and Keg and Cork. It starts at 1 p.m. There'll be free live music with Eric Koskinen, David Huckfeldt, Little Fevers, and more, as well as food and beverages on Beltrami Avenue. Info at KEXC's Facebook page, and it's made possible by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund.
This is 91.7 KEXC Grand Rapids and 90.5 KBXC Bagley Bemidji. We operate translator K210DR in Brainerd at 89.9. Since 1976, Northern Community Radio has been telling the stories of the people and the land of northern Minnesota through music, news, conversation, and events. Listen at KAXE.org or on your smart speaker. Keep KAXE people-powered into the future with your support now. Text the word DONATE to 218-326-1234. Thank you. We receive support from Dragonfly Coffee, located in Central Square Mall in Grand Rapids, featuring a scratch bakery and offering espresso, bubble tea, and more. Empowering inclusion and community through employment, special orders available, and more at drinkdragonfly.com.
Thanks also to the Friends of the Rice Lake National Wildlife Refuge near McGregor. They offer 18,000 acres of woods, water, and wildlife for the public to experience, located 5 miles south of McGregor on Highway 65. Learn more about Friends of Rice Lake National Wildlife Refuge events and activities on Facebook.
We receive support from Bratton Tree Care, located in Grand Rapids, Minnesota, providing quality service to the Minnesota Northland. With 5 years' experience and an ISA arborist on staff, Bratton Tree Care is able to handle all your tree service needs. Learn more at brattontreecare.com.
Tuesday's summer concert series continues in Grand Rapids each Tuesday at noon. Today, Third Coast Chamber artists and retreat participants will perform at the Alliance Church. And also going on, more music tonight in Bemidji, the Bemidji High School Marching Band. Enjoy a pulled pork dinner at Bemidji High School starting at 5:30, followed by a performance in the arena at 7 p.m.
Programming is supported by North in Bloom, located in downtown Grand Rapids, providing floral arrangements for all occasions and holidays throughout the year, also offering wedding consultations, flower subscriptions, and gift sets. More information at northinbloom.com.
Time now to take a listen to our album of the week. Tornado Bob's going to be joining us in this half hour, and we'll be talking weather, which you can send in a question if you have it, 218-326-1234. But this week we are featuring Tift Merritt. This is a North Carolina based singer songwriter, her 7th album and her first since 2017. Throughout the album, she asks big questions about love, not through classic love songs, but by considering how searching for and receiving or not receiving it affects everything around us. Here's Tift Merritt. That's Tift Merritt, our album of the week. We would like to know what you think. The song there we heard was called Finest Feelings. 218-326-1234 from North Carolina. You'll find information on it at KAXE.org.
Support comes from Paul Bunyan Communications, offering technology for businesses, including cloud solutions, cybersecurity services, network management, and more, all with local customer service and support. Paul Bunyan Communications, Northern Minnesota's local broadband cooperative.
And we'd like to thank Woodworks Homes, dedicated to the art of building in Northern Minnesota by constructing handcrafted new homes and offering remodeling services. More at woodworksmn.com. We got another text that came in, John. We heard from our friends Rick and Gail from 10 Mile Lake in Hackensack. They're saying they're continuing to enjoy watching a male and female oriole come to our hummingbird feeders. Generally, by this time, they would have moved into the forest and we no longer see them. But this year, they are sticking around. Lucky us.
Yeah, indeed. I have tried and failed to bring the orioles. They come to the hummingbird feeder and I put out grape jelly and they ignore it and they disappear. And so I feel badly. I suspect that they're probably nesting in the area. They're just not availing themselves of the food that I'm offering. I've taken in the jelly and washed the feeder and we're done with that. But
we this year we had some orioles. We had some oranges that we had put those out and they had slowly been eating that, and then we kind of hollowed that out and put the jelly inside the orange as a little container.
Oh, there's a thought. I should try that.
They seemed to kind of, I don't know if it was like orange infused jelly, so it's like the fancy thing for them, but that kind of worked for a while. But hey, we heard from our friend Noah in Britt reporting in. Good morning from the homestead. Haven't texted in a while, just been busy with the garden, bears, and beehives. On the topic of turtles, I would also agree that I haven't seen as many painted turtles compared to the last few years. But on the other hand, I was in the Boundary Waters a couple weeks ago, and there were a dozen, probably more, painted turtles all over the place near the campsite, digging and laying eggs. It was amazing. They were crawling everywhere. Had a fawn trot through the clover here about 30 minutes ago. Bees are buzzing. Everywhere you look, something amazing is waiting to be seen. I just kind of put my head in the raspberry patch the other day because there's so many bees in there, mm-hmm. and that sound.
Yeah.
It's very exciting.
You know, I think people tend to fear the bees.
They're gentle.
They are. They really don't want to sting you. If you step on a ground hornet's nest, yeah, you're going to get warned and probably a bit abused by the ground hornets. But for the most part, if they're out gathering nectar, you can bang in among them and they just, you know, they accept you as just being part of the environment and they don't bother you. So that's kind of cool. Speaking of bees, my friend Al Lipke from Hibbing sent me a picture of a mantis fly. A mantis, a wasp mantis or a mantis wasp. It turns out that it's a member of the lacewing family. It's not a wasp at all. It simply looks like a wasp to keep it from being attacked by, you know, it's one of those mimicry things where if I look like a wasp, those things that are familiar with what wasps can do will leave me alone. The close-up of the mantis fly, the front two legs are grabbers, just like on the praying mantis. And it has that triangular head that is familiar with those of us that have looked at the praying mantis. And Al got a nice picture of it. I went and did some research on it, found out that it is a lacewing, that it is doesn't have a stinger. It is a healthy and beneficial animal to have in your garden. It attacks and devours a lot of pests that would be in your garden. So if you're lucky enough to find one of these by your house, by all means, check it out. They are pretty astonishing when you look at them. They've got this wasp body, but if you look carefully, you'll see the triangular head of a praying mantis and the folded arms up front of a praying mantis. So interesting little bug, but nothing to be afraid of.
We also heard from Dave Murphy saying, sending photos in, a painted and a snapper laying eggs at our cabin in Deer River last week. So
good.
Thanks.
I think part of it is the dryness. It's been so dry, and turtles like moisture. They like the soil to be damp, because if it's not, it keeps caving in and they end up, you know, imagine digging out a hole in sand, and every time you got it right where you thought it should be, it falls in again. And so you're digging and digging and digging and digging and digging some more. And pretty soon you've got a hole you can't crawl out of. But I'm encouraged. And, of course, only one turtle need survive for the population to continue. And they've been here since the age of the Stegosaurus and the Triceratops, mm-hmm. which is 235 million years before the Tyrannosaurus.
So they have some
long history going for them.
Keep the text coming. 218-326-1234. Coming up, we talk weather with Tornado Bob.
Hey everybody, this is Eric Koskinen. You're listening to KAXE. KAXE gives support to independent musicians,
Bob.
Like myself. KAXE is my favorite radio station in the state of Minnesota.
How do you like my
And you can donate here. There at KAXE.org.
Anywhere I quit my job, yeah, it just won't pay. I worked all year, I worked all month, then they took my money away.
It is 8:14, and you are tuned in to People Powered KEXE. That was Eric Koskinen. He will be at Beltrami Block Party. We hope you'll be joining us, this free live music event this Saturday, downtown Bemidji. We've got Eric Koskinen coming, along with David Huckfeldt, Little Fevers. Going to be a lot of fun. Begins at 1 p.m. this Saturday. Made possible by the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund.
We receive support from Grand Rapids State Bank, committed to serving the Grand Rapids area for over 110 years. More at grsb.bank, member FDIC, equal housing lender.
And thanks to Edward Jones financial advisor Christina Gallas, helping individuals and business owners reach their financial goals. More information, edwardjones.com. Edward Jones, member SIPC. It's time to talk weather. There he is.
Here I am.
Here's our guy. Yeah. Good morning, Bob.
Good morning, John. Good morning, Heidi.
Good morning.
How was the bike ride?
Good. Yeah, nice.
Did you have a cloud of deer flies chasing you?
Oh, no, I'm too fast for that.
I thought you might be.
On a bike, I am anyway. Running is a different story. The deer flies, you have to sprint. You can get away from deer flies if you run, but you have to kind of go at a more than cruising pace, more than steady pace. You have to sprint from them.
There is no way I'm outrunning a deer fly, Bob. It's just not going to happen. They'll fly past me thinking he's got to be faster than this. But yeah, I'm not outrunning the little devils. I saw a couple on the dog the other day, but they haven't been bothering me.
No, they're not really populous yet, but it's only June, 23rd now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Their numbers are still climbing. Mosquitoes are another thing that I have not been afflicted by, thanks to the dryness, I suspect. I did do some math, and I think I' 'm up to about 1.5 inches, maybe a little bit more, so far in June.
Yep.
And you're in the same neighborhood.
Mm-hmm. And so basically a week left in June.
We need 3 inches to make it well.
Yeah, a little shy of 3 inches would get us.
Two and a half would get us close to the mark.
Yeah, I doubt we'll get that.
We're not going to get 2.5 inches out of this thing coming through today?
No. Uh-uh.
Dang.
So I think this is the last in the series of systems that we're getting in this sort of pattern. We had somewhat cooler weather.
Yeah.
And high is not particularly hot, but just still summer-like, what's typically summer-like in our long-term history of June. We're not, if you look back 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, typical high in the summertime is closer, low 80s, like 80.
Yeah, yeah.
And we're kind of in, the 70s for highs, which is not unusual for us. So, and then we've had a little bit of, the larger scale pattern has been featuring a little bit more of an upper level trough. We talked about that last week a little bit when we were talking about the troughs mean there's upper level low pressure. That's a little bit more unsettled. And I think that matches our climatology a little bit better, and that we get the just very little bit of a upper level low moving through. And then we get these smaller shots of rain, quarter inch, maybe half inch, but really not much. And they occur more frequently. In recent summers, we've missed a lot of those where it might be kind of warm and humid, but and then there's a chance of storms, but usually they miss you.
Yeah.
So,
In all of the rain that has fallen in June, I have not exceeded 0.3 inches yet.
Right.
26, 28, 25, 23. Nice quarter inch of rain is always welcome. And I guess the way it's falling in that it isn't a deluge, it's just kind of a nice, even, steady rain, which helps it to soak in and not run off, but still really dry.
Yeah, I don't think of this place as a place that normally gets huge amounts of rain, big deluges. Those things are more common farther south, southern Minnesota, just because of the lay of the landscape redirects those deluges down towards the west and south of us. Because we've been getting patterns that favor these deluges, we get a lot of things that miss us. And our pattern of like cooler weather with more upper level lows and some like somewhat unsettled weather, but not really horribly unsettled. That's the pattern that we've had been in a couple weeks now, and it's kind of allowed us to keep up a little bit better with our as opposed to being dry like we were in May.
Yeah,
late May we started getting into this hot pattern, upper level ridging, and so we'll see how that this will be the last system of this little really somewhat cooler pattern. More trophy pattern, we'll say, at our mid levels of the atmosphere, just upper level troughs. And next week we'll be getting more of a little bit of a trough in the west a bit coming in this weekend. And downstream from that, we have a little bit of a ridge. So there'll be some upper level ridging here. So I think it will dry out to some extent. But there will also be some moisture sneaking in to our west up into the Dakotas. And so it's going to be kind of an interesting pattern because we have a trough in the west that will be coming in. It's a little bit deeper than is normal for like the very end of June and beginning of July. So could be presenting some interesting things.
Yeah. Do you think that that we will be getting back to some 80s, 85 anytime soon?
That depends on where the ridge sets up and how sharp it is. I think we'll get some of that in the next couple weeks. And
we just had a call come in to 218-326-1234 and a text as well. Susan from Cotton saying she had 1.53 so far for cocoa ras for June this far, and that's the moisture. So we got a question from Jim near Lake Vermilion.
I'm curious about whether or not the ash has caused...
Last year's summer smoke and ash have anything to do with this year's lush forest. It's so green this year. Also, he's been having lots of turtles.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Glad to hear about the turtles. As far as the lush greenness, Does smoke and ash, I suppose ash would be...
I would guess it does not. Think of the level of nutrients it would add.
That's,
supposing you are depositing that ash on the ground. There are, because it's burned up residual trees, residual forest, and you're... It can provide nutrients. I would guess that a lot of that ash is coming right through, or a lot of those days it's elevated and doesn't reach, it's kind of going over the top and doesn't reach ground. So I don't have the information to say how much of that is reaching the soil. I mean, some of it
is getting
does,
deposited.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it tends to be on, drier days, but that you notice it, but it's raining. Then you're actively scavenging it out of the atmosphere, and it's got to be adding nutrients to the forest floor.
If it's anything like regular potash, like fly ash from my wood stove, putting that on the soils causes it to sweeten. It raises the pH, which would favor certain plants over others, but which plants, I can't tell you. And as far as, is it more green than past years? That's a tough one. I can't really say. I guess greenness isn't something that I have followed. I mean, it's definitely green out there right now.
Yeah.
And this is the time of year that the leaves sort of reach their full potential. So
yes,
they're about full-sized. So that can make things look pretty green.
I would say also that like a couple of weeks ago, it was not, I mean, if you look at lawns and everything like that, it was not green.
Yes.
Yeah. The grass, shallow rooted vegetation was getting pretty brown.
Yes.
And, but now with just a little bit of moisture, it has greened up a fair bit.
Yeah. Well, I've already mowed my lawn twice this year, and I may have to do it again before the middle of July.
Okay. Twice?
Well, yeah. Sometimes one year I only mowed my lawn four times, but
okay.
I live at the end of the road and I don't have people driving by and complaining. I tell my wife I can still see the dog. It's not that high.
Okay. Yeah. Might as well not.
Well, you know.
It's something I don't enjoy really.
Yeah, it's not one of my favorite sports.
No. And a lot of, we'll go on about that some other day. But.
Indeed. So ridging and the weather systems looks like we're going to kind of stay status quo. Doesn't look like anything's going to change markedly. You don't see a lot of opportunities for...
It'll change. I know if you're in the Dakotas, if you're west of here, it'll get kind of warm and humid.
Mm-hmm.
And chances of thunderstorms out that way.
Yeah.
So for us, yeah, we'll have maybe a chance, more of a chance for thunderstorms rather than showers next week.
Okay.
So we'll see how that works out. I think we'll have, sometimes in these cases, the warm air kind of sneaks up a little bit west of here, and we'll get, this upper level ridge will give you southerly winds, but just as you get toward closer to Lake Superior, it's coming more from the southeast and the east, and it stays kind of cool. That's a sort of pattern we often get into. It's like, well, it looks like it's going to warm up, but then you get a little bit more easterly flow off of the lake and off the Great Lakes, and it's not a source for hot air for us.
Yeah. What role does humidity play in all of this? I mean, if we're hot and dry here, mm-hmm. does that, and it's hot and wet or humid out in the Dakotas, are they more likely to have rain than we are? Does humidity play a pretty significant role in the development of storms or?
It can. I mean, there has to be other stuff going on. You have to have the humidity there, but if you have the humidity, but you don't have some sort of lift, some process that gets the thunderstorms developing, then yeah, you don't get much. You can have this most humid air mass with lots of instability. And if there's no mechanism for sustaining lift or that updraft in the thunderstorms, the air's unstable, you'll get an updraft, but there has to be some larger forcing to balance that out, because otherwise you'd get updraft and very soon you'd be compensating downdrafts, which would dry things out. So it's an interesting mass and moisture balance that goes on in the atmosphere. You can't just have the instability there.
So high humidity doesn't necessarily mean rain.
No, it can go right over, we can just be going right over the top of you.
Be hot and sweaty and get no relief.
Exactly. So you need some sort of lift, like a front. You need a low pressure. You need a warm front, cold front in southern plains. On our storm chasing tours, we like to see dry lines, which are kind of like a front, but it's between warm, humid, and hot and dry. And those are sort of the boundaries that form thunderstorms as well. So we look for those sorts of things in when we're out storm chasing, and if we want rain, we want a warm front, or warm fronts tend to be best for us in northeastern Minnesota. If you get days where it's kind of overcast here, we're north of the warm front, it's cloudy, you might have some thunderstorm riding up and over that front in the warmer, more humid air that's above you. Those are better moisture sources for us than cold fronts are.
Okay.
The cold fronts, the way they come through, tend to, I don't know, just the way they interact with our landscape, our larger landscape, they don't present as much, they don't provide as much rain for us as other places.
So the other day I was coming back from the cities. It was Friday afternoon. Mm-hmm. And my wife called me and said, be careful. There are storms. We're having hail in the cities. And they had golf ball sized hail around my daughter's place up in northeast Minneapolis. Mm-hmm. And I ran into almost nothing, a shower here and there.
Yes.
When I got home, I had total rainfall in my gauge of like 2/10.
Well, that's good.
Yeah, well, I was pretty happy, but I didn't see any of that storm that she was talking about.
No.
It was, I don't know, dissipated when it got up here, or there wasn't enough lift to form
that lift. That's another case where if you look at these systems that come through and the way they interact with our landscape, I mean, it tends to provide moisture and lift for thunderstorms that are south of us and west of us. So it's the typical case where we don't see, and today would be another example. So I got to check the radar right now. We've been talking about other stuff.
But, yep. Give us a rundown on what to expect today.
Yeah. So if I check radar right now, there's something in the eastern Dakotas. Where is it? Yeah. It's coming through Fargo now. It's getting in the Red River Valley. It'll be drifting eastward during the morning and during the daylight hours. And you can see, if you looked right now, you see in the south end is where the heaviest stuff is around Fargo. That will probably, get into central Minnesota and then drift, it drifts down I-94, and then the northern part of that will kind of, sort of fall apart. So the farther north you are in Minnesota, north of Highway 2, the more likely it is that this rain will kind of split up and miss you. If you're down south towards Brainerd, more likely to hit you there.
Okay.
It's a line, it's our arc of storms that, thunderstorms near Fargo, and it goes up the Red River Valley, becomes lighter as you go north, and then it curves back around into northeastern North Dakota. And that'll be moving through the area today. And the southern end of that is going to be the strongest. And so Grand Rapids, we're sort of right on that, kind of on the gradient. So south of Grand Rapids, you'll probably see a good chance of rain. North of Grand Rapids, not as much of a chance.
Okay. One more thing. As I was coming out to come to the studios this morning about 5:15, there was a layer of fog that was probably 20 feet deep And it was not at ground, and it was not much higher than halfway up the trees.
Wow.
And it was just this band.
Yes.
And what happened there? Just the right temperature to cause the atmosphere to sort of coalesce into droplets that could be seen? Is there a reason that it wasn't down to the ground or up much higher? Is that...
That's a good question on where why you get a layer of fog that is not at ground level. Now, in the evening, you see those fog layers pretty much right at ground level.
Yeah.
In the morning, they can be...
slightly elevated.
Yeah, slightly elevated. My guess is it might have... I haven't looked at that in great detail.
Mm-hmm.
It could have something to do with radiative transfer. So radiation... So liquid water is very, very opaque. It's like a black body to like infrared radiation. So it absorbs infrared and it also emits it. And if you're, infrared radiation is not really going to get past it very well.
Mm-hmm.
So, if you have a layer of, say, low level clouds, you're not going to cool that much at ground level, because that layer of clouds intercepts that radiation from the ground and radiates it back at you. So it's like a mirror for the infrared radiation. So above that layer, though, if you have clear skies above it, it's radiating quite a bit. So
okay.
if you form a fog layer, think of it as, here's a guess, this is a hypothesis.
Okay.
Because like the details, I don't know how well it's been studied and on fog layers and whether they're like the ones that are 5 feet above ground and or treetop level, why is it not, or also ground, fog at ground level. But anyway, so the top of that layer is radiating, it's cooling, and the bottom is not exposed to the sky anymore. Its radiated properties are different. So the bottom is warmer, top is cooler. If you're cooling things off, it's more favorable for condensation and, condensing the moisture out that's in the air.
Mm-hmm.
So, I'd say that, at some point it can be a little bit warmer and drier. That fog layer becomes elevated during the night.
Yeah,
but
it was spectacular. It was fun to look at. I enjoyed it. Hey, Bob, thanks for coming in. Thanks for joining us this morning, and. We will be tuned in for more weather news next week. Thanks.
Thanks for having me.
Coming up, we've got local news with the Up North Report at 9 o'clock. Malachi Coons is your host for Headwaters.
For KAXE News, I'm Chelsea Perkins with the Up North Report. A 65-year-old Bemidji pedestrian died Sunday night after he was struck by a vehicle. The Beltrami County Sheriff's Office reported the man identified as Floyd Cloud was hit on Division Street Northwest, west of Bemidji in Grant Valley Township. The driver of the vehicle remained at the scene of the crash and fully cooperated with law enforcement. The Minnesota State Patrol responded and is assisting with the crash reconstruction. A 53-year-old Baxter man died after the motorcycle he was driving collided with a pickup truck early Thursday morning. Dennis Hyatt was traveling north on a Harley-Davidson cruiser on Highway 371, making a left turn on Pine Beach Road north of Baxter. A 56-year-old Baxter man was southbound in a Ford F-150. The vehicles collided in the intersection, and Hyatt died at the scene. The other driver was not injured. The Minnesota State Patrol reported the road was dry at the time of the crash, and Hyatt was not wearing a helmet. A federal judge has nullified six subpoenas issued back in January as part of a criminal investigation into whether Governor Tim Walz, Minneapolis Mayor Jacob Frey, and other state and city officials impeded federal immigration enforcement. The Minnesota Reformer reports that in an order unsealed on Monday, U.S. District Court Chief Judge Patrick Schiltz writes that the, quote, information sought in the subpoenas and any possible criminal violation range from extremely weak to non-existent. He also says it, quote, only adds to the overwhelming evidence that these subpoenas were not issued to investigate, but to harass, coerce, and retaliate. On January 20th, the Department of Justice issued the subpoenas seeking a broad range of records related to immigration enforcement dating back to last January. Schiltz was appointed by President George W. Bush and is also a one-time clerk for the late Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia. Walls, in a statement, says the criminal investigation is another example of President Donald Trump investigating his political opponents. Fry says no one should be punished for questioning the actions of elected officials and that, quote, no community should be expected to accept harmful policies without objection. The U.S. Attorney's Office of Minnesota declined to comment to the reformer about Schiltz's order and whether it intends to appeal it. The Schiltz order is another instance of federal judges rapping the Trump administration on the knuckles this year. Schiltz and his Minnesota colleagues accused the administration of repeatedly violating court orders to release immigration detainees. Judges also ordered the Trump administration to ensure proper access to counsel and freedom of worship at the Henry Whipple Federal Building, which is the state headquarters of U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement. Changes to toughen the cancellation policy for Boundary Waters permits are in the works, and the public is invited to weigh in. The goal is to get unused permits back into the system faster by updating refund timing to encourage earlier cancellations. Those who cancel 28 days or more before a trip would get half of the deposit. Cancellations between 3 and 28 days would get 25% back, while those who cancel within 2 days would forfeit their deposits. The current cancellation policy allows people to be refunded fully, minus the $6 reservation fee, if they cancel 2 or more days ahead of time. The BWCA is managed with daily entry quotas from May through September, and those permits are released in January. Late cancellations and no-shows continue to climb. In 2025, nearly 40% of January on-sale reservations were never used, limiting timely access for others. If changes are approved, they would go into effect next January. People may comment through July 22nd at the Superior National Forest website by email or by mail. The Minnesota Department of Natural Resources has added 2 northern Minnesota counties to a deer feeding and attractant ban. The intent of the ban is to reduce the risk of chronic wasting disease spread following detections of CWD in wild deer in new areas of the state last year. Feeding deer encourages them to congregate, which can increase the likelihood of transmission if a deer is infected. The ban now extends to Becker and Clearwater counties. The other new counties are Grant, McLeod, and Meeker, making it a total of 37 included in the ban. That's it for the Up North Report from the KAXE News Desk. I'm Chelsea Perkins, telling the stories of northern Minnesota through local news.
The Up North Report is sponsored by Woodland Bank, with locations in Grand Rapids, Cohasset, Hill City, and Deer River, dedicated to serving the financial needs of the community and their customers. More info at woodland.bank.
You are listening to the Tuesday Morning Show. It is 8:40. I'm Heidi Holton. Check out KAXE.org for the latest news information. We'll have the latest Season Watch pod later this week, as well as John's Phenology Report if you missed it earlier. Go to KAXE.org. Don't forget, this Saturday, it is the Beltrami Block Party in downtown Bemidji, put on by KAXE, KBXE, thanks to the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund, as well as Bridget's Pub and Keg and Cork. There's going to be free live music, Eric Koskinen, David Huckfeldt, Little Fevers, and more, as well as food and beverages on Beltrami Avenue.
Like that, some don't know where it's at. If you don't get loose and you don't groove, your motor won't make it and your motor won't move. Time don't tell and don't ask me. Riding on a hurricane down to the sea, you don't hear the music, turn it up loud. It's movement on the air, movement on the ground. She got style, yeah, she got groove. Turn around, do it again. Boy,
don't care at all. He said, easy come, easy go, anyway the wind blows. Easy come, easy go, anyway the wind blows. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Better change your ways or you never get to heaven. 8, 9, 10, gonna stop at 11. 11 just hangs around with 7.
Minnesota's own David Huckfeldt. He will be performing this Saturday live and free at the Beltrami. Of course, he'll be live and free at the Beltrami Block Party in downtown Bemidji. All are invited. There'll be food and beverages on hand and begins at 1 o'clock. Also music by Eric Koskinen and Little Fevers. This comes off of Huckfeldt's album called I Was Born, but it's a solo album from him. He was formerly of the Pines, and a collection of 15 covers. That's the J.J. Cale song there. I'm Heidi Holton. Tornado Bob is still in the studio with us now. It's 8:45. Now, Bob, when I looked at weather this morning, I want to talk about the next few days here, what we're seeing. You were kind of saying that we may not see some of these showers and isolated thunderstorms, and from what I read on the National Weather Service, it's likely like 80%. So what's a gal to do when I hear these differing things? And I'm going, you know, I intentionally go to the National Weather Service as my source, not, you know, not the free app that comes with my phone.
Sure. Yeah. The Weather Service is a good source, I think.
Okay.
Yeah. And perhaps the way that I talk, I'm like one of these like total weather nerds that wants to get a lot of rain and enjoy big weather. So
it doesn't seem like that big a deal to you?
Yeah. So what it might be in my head is I could be going and saying like, well, it'll be a shower here. We'll get some light 500ths of an inch and
sure,
it won't rain now. It'll rain enough to get the ground wet and then it'll quit. Versus you're going to get a half inch of rain and it'll rain kind of steady and it'll cause some puddles, you know, stuff like
that. Okay.
It probably, yeah, rain is likely, but
isolated severe storms is what they're saying for, but that includes Grand Rapids and Brainerd and over to Bemidji as well, most of our listening area. And even on their, you know, their weather story that they have on their webpage, it said, the primary hazard if severe storms, so I understand there, do form, would be hail up to the size of ping pong balls. The secondary hazards would be wind gusts up to 60 miles an hour and locally heavy rainfall.
Yeah, so they're the way it looks, trying to refine that a bit, it's more likely, if I'm looking at some of the model weather models that we have, and a lot of those show the stronger storms being on the south end of whatever comes through the area today. So right now, it's off in the Red River Valley, from Fargo up through Grand Forks and northward. Mm-hmm. And if you're just east of there now, a county east of that, you're getting some rain and some thunderstorms if you're closer to Fargo. And that system will work its way east during the afternoon today. And it's pretty extensive north-south. So if you're in the area, especially if you're in the western part of our area, if you're over Bemidji, you'll very, very likely get some rain, almost certainly. And then as you get farther east, what we're seeing on the model runs, at least, is the southern part of that system continuing to be stronger and the northern part kind of dissipating and splitting off. There's another part, that the farther northern part, that's up in northeastern North Dakota and up towards Devil's Lake and northeast from there towards Pembina. That's kind of peel off and go more northeast, and there's going to be a little bit of a gap in between there. Suffice it to say, if you're in you're in the Grand Rapids area, you probably still get some rain. Okay. It might be lighter than would you'd get it if you were in Brainerd, and also lighter than what you'd get maybe in Bemidji.
Okay. So. And then also looking like similar forecast for tomorrow.
Yes. So the systems are still around. The upper level low that's associated with this rain coming in today is still going to be in the area tomorrow. So tomorrow's going to be more like sort of those scattered hit or miss showers, maybe a thunderstorm. So it may, I'd say less than 50% chance of getting rain. So a lot of the area will be covered. You know, you might get half an inch of rain out of one of these showers.
Okay.
But a lot of people will also get nothing. It's just where exactly where they develop. It's a little hard to say. You know, we can't say exactly where that's going to be.
But then continuing to look like, so Thursday looks great with sun and really mild temperatures for this time of year, 72 to 75 degrees. Are mm-hmm. you seeing any big warm-ups, like we had a couple of days of that this summer, of 90s.
Right. That could happen next week.
Okay.
So, as I this upper level ridge is going to be coming in over the weekend and warming things up a little bit, but sometimes it just still get a little bit of flow off from the southeast off of and from the east off of Lake Superior, and that stays a little cooler here for a while. But by next week, I think we're going to be getting into some warmer air again.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah, it looks like maybe 80s. So I also wanted to ask you, I don't usually watch like network news, nightly news, but I saw mm-hmm. that last night and they were showing the dramatic tornado coverage, but they weren't even telling us where it was. Were you watching what was going on over the last few days?
A couple days ago, there were some tornadoes in southern Illinois, kind of a little bit outbreak down there. Mm-hmm. They're pretty dramatic looking. I saw some video of them.
Mm-hmm. Were they more east than they normally are, some of the tornadoes that came through? I swear I heard that.
Yeah, a lot of times, when we're out, our storm chase tours were, we're out west in the open areas where you can see things better. And this year, definitely, when I was out, we had to go more often towards the east.
Okay.
We got to Illinois. We got to Louisiana. And where we want to be chasing is in the Texas Panhandle and eastern Colorado. We were there a little bit, too. But, a lot of the storms of the tornadoes of the, well, tornado severe weather type has been, that's been a little farther. Illinois has been, has had a lot of stuff this year.
Yeah. And then I don't know if you, do you watch any of the, last summer we had a lot of bad air quality from the storms coming in.
Yeah.
You pay attention to that kind of stuff too?
Bad air quality, largely from the wildfire smoke. And we've gotten very little of that so far this year. We've been pretty lucky. And I did see early this week, they've been having some thunderstorms up in Alaska, and those often start forest fires up there. So if you get the, Alaskan forest, it's a little bit far away from us, but mm-hmm. if you get forest fires in, northwestern Canada, then some of that can get, that smoke will get down here later in the summer. So, count your lucky stars right now because we haven't had really any episodes of smoke, but I'm sure that's coming at some point.
Yeah. Text just came in asking you, when will we get our super El Nino?
El Nino. That El Nino is really already here.
Okay.
And it's strengthening. And yeah, it's I've been looking at some of the data on that. And if you look at the heat content in the Pacific Ocean right along the equator in this region they call the Nino regions, what is this, Nino 3.4, if you want to be exact. It's an area that covers a lot of the central and eastern Pacific along the equator. That heat content is pretty much at record levels. I mean, the records go back only about 50 years, though. But, that heat content is pretty high right now. So we do have a strong El Nino developing. And the conditions are already here. But in the summertime, the tropics are fairly, that part of the tropics is fairly disconnected from what our weather pattern is during the summer. But in the fall and winter, our circulation changes enough because of the changes of the tilt, relative to the sun as we move into fall, that becomes more connected to us. And we often get milder winters. And the West Coast tends to get more rain, California, the Southern U.S. tends to be a little bit rainier, and the Northern, part of the U.S. and into Canada, stays warmer and kind of dry. So less dramatic. The last one we had, last El Nino was in, 23-24 over that winter. And it was our mildest.
Okay.
I can't say that those weather patterns that created that mild winter were all, it wasn't all due to El Nino. There was other factors involved too, because the El Nino that year wasn't particularly strong. It was moderate to strong, but it wasn't like super strong.
Okay.
So, what we have now coming up is, like 2015, 2016, it was a mild winter, but it wasn't there wasn't an abnormal lack of snow. And then 1982, 83 was another big one, and 97, 98. So it's very likely to be a mild winter this year.
Okay. Huh. Well, that's Tornado Bob. You don't forget, you hear him Tuesday mornings. You can text any questions you might have or let us know what nature you are seeing. We had someone text in about how they live in Hibbing and they're seeing army worms around their apple tree. Are they around anywhere else? So we're going to put that call out to you. Are you seeing army worms where you are? You can text us at 218-326-1234. Our thanks goes out to Rapids Brewing Company, a place for gathering and community featuring live music multiple times a week. Farm fresh food and rotating beers from their own brew house. More info about events, music, and menu, rapidsbrewingco.com. More now from National Public Radio. We're learning about some summer reading.
This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Amy Martinez.
I'm Michelle Martin.
And I'm Layla Faldin. It's officially summer, which can be a nice time to catch up on reading. And just in time, our NPR Books team has published a list of some of our staff's favorite reads so far this year. Joining us is Chloe Weiner, producer of NPR's Book of the Day podcast. She's here to share with us some of the nonfiction books we've loved in 2026. Good morning, Chloe.
Hi, Layla.
All right, so Summer Books We Love is here. Are there any trends you noticed from the list?
Yeah, I was impressed that there is a huge range of books. So there's really something in this list for everyone. A lot of the nonfiction takes big, intimidating subjects and makes them more approachable, often from a more personal perspective. Like this memoir from the law professor Kimberly Crenshaw. Morning Edition's own Michelle Martin recommended this one. So Crenshaw's work led to the development of two terms that have been incredibly influential and politically controversial: intersectionality and critical race theory. These topics sound pretty academic, but Michelle actually said this is a raw, funny, and at times heartbreaking account of how Crenshaw was born to be a backtalker, which is the title of her memoir. So if you've avoided the firestorm over critical race theory somehow, I think picking up this book could be a good way to dive in.
And maybe demystify it for a lot of people. Did any other themes or topics stand out?
Yeah, there were a couple of books on this list that use the environment to tell a bigger story. One is When It's Darkness on the Delta by Ralph Eubanks. It's a book about the Mississippi Delta, which has some of the richest soil in the United States, but remains one of the poorest parts of the country. Eubanks looks at the history of the region through its landscape, which once held a lot of promise for Black farmers, and he thinks about what it would take to break free from the Delta's history as a plantation economy. There's another book on this list, too. It's more about the natural world than the built environment, but the book is In Trees by Robert Moore. And like it sounds, Moore looks at what humans can learn from trees, kind of from a philosophical point of view. There are histories of bonsai trees and treehouses, but also of climate activism. It's a neat blend of philosophy, history, and science.
What if people are looking for something more fun? I mean, it is summer, more of a beach read vibe, maybe a break from heavy topics and the news.
Totally understand why you'd ask that. One fun book, depending on your idea of fun, is a kind of biography of the fictional character Hannibal Lecter. It's called Hannibal Lecter, A Life, and it's by Brian Raftery. It's all about the famous killer who appears in The Silence of the Lambs and other Thomas Harris novels. This biography looks into why this villain has been so beloved and important in American culture. But personally, I'm looking for something a little less scary, and I'm looking forward to finally reading Lena Dunham's Famesick. I was a big fan of her show Girls and have enjoyed seeing her back in the spotlight. This memoir gets into her relationships with castmates like Adam Driver and her chronic illness. She also talks about being a millennial and the culture of the 2010s. A lot of my friends have recommended the audiobook specifically, which Dunham narrates. I'm hoping to be listening to that on the beach later this summer.
That's NPR's Chloe Weiner. She produces our Book of the Day podcast. Thank you so much, Chloe.
Thanks, Layla.
And you can find more of our staff's favorite reads of the year so far at npr.org/books. That's npr.org/books. This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Layla Faldin.
I'm Michelle Martin.
And I'm Mae Martinez.
Let us know what you're reading. Check out what we're reading on our webpage as well, 21KEXE.org. Our thanks goes out to North Homes Children and Family Services for their support, providing compassionate mental health services to children and families. Northhomes.org. And thanks to Oak Hill Assisted Living in Grand Rapids, providing personalized care in a home setting. More information at oakhillseniors.com. Coming up at 9 o'clock, we bring you Headwaters. Malachi Coons will be your host. Our thanks goes out to IM Hotel in Grand Rapids, providing access to local